This podcast replay is brought to you by RedRecover.com. From NFL stars like Hayden Hurst to daily warriors like yourself, their wraps and pads are designed to deliver maximum benefits with each treatment anywhere you go.
And it's Wednesday, and thankfully I'm home, and it's Thanksgiving week, and the heat, not so good, Kurt Heelan, but we have a next hour to talk about that on RedRecover.com Inside the Paint this week. As well as go around the NBA. I'm Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. 9 a.m. on a Wednesday, can't complain. It's Kurt Heelan from ProBasketballTalk.com and NBCSports.com. 6 a.m. on the West Coast. He might be able to complain, but you can sleep in on Thursday. I think it's a holiday, although who knows with our work schedules what's going on.
Yeah. Woj tends to screw up holidays, doesn't he? Like, you see that tweet coming, you're like, oh, no.
Yes. Yes, and that's why, for people who don't know, in our business, pretty much you have the cell phone sitting on the table next to you at all times, whether it's date night with the wife, whether it's Thanksgiving, there's always something going on there. So it's an interesting time. I guess, Kurt, there's a whole bunch of directions I want to go in with today. But I guess where I want to start is, when is panic time in the NBA? In your view, when you look at the NBA, we always hear coaches say that Tim Reynolds, the AP, just posted a story this yesterday, that the 20-game mark is when we sort of get a little bit concerned. Monty Williams was in here last week with the Suns. He said, hey, that's who you are at 20. Then you decide what you can do about it. Do you buy 20 games as sort of a litmus test, or do you think there's more to it than that?
I think it's a good measuring stick, because I think you now have – enough games to have said, I think Monty put it well, this is who you are. This is who you are right now. Injuries and other issues, which certainly are impacting the Heat, right? Like, there's a couple teams in the league right now, and I think the Heat are among them, where I'm like, I still am not sure what they are fully healthy.
Exactly.
I'm still not what their peak is. I think what worries me about the Heat is, and it might you too, and I'm sure it does the fans, is last year they had absences, they had missing guys, and guys stepped up. And I just, that's what I kind of haven't seen this year, is
right,
the Duncan Robinsons of the world coming in, and he's had some good nights, but not every night. And those gaps weren't filled the same way. But right now, they're still filling gaps. Like, I just don't know what this team fully healthy looks like.
And that's a really good point, and I agree with that. Let me just get this extra audio off. Now we can actually hear you. I agree with that. I thought Eric Spoelstra, Kurt, had a really good point, though. He mentioned to us, he says, in a typical year, you might look at 20 games. He goes, but the conferences are so all over the place.
Yeah.
We've had teams that have been very good already and suddenly very bad, and we've had other teams like Sacramento climb up the standings in front of our eyes when we thought, okay, it's the same old Kings, it's the same old stuff. So I do think there's a degree of difference there in this season. Also, I believe with the baseball type series, teams haven't had really a full around the league sample. And I'll give you an example. The Heat have already played their full 2-game series against the Warriors, 2-game series against the Blazers, 2-game series against the Kings. They had a 2-game homestand against Toronto, a 2-game homestand against Charlotte. They're playing Wednesday night tonight against Washington at home and Friday against Washington at home. Next week, we'll talk about this at the end of our show. We go over the upcoming schedule. They have Boston on Wednesday and Friday. So they have another 2-game series. So I think what you're seeing is, typically in the first 20 games, you might be facing 20 different teams, maybe at least 18 different teams. This year, that number for the Heat is like down to 12. So you haven't experienced the 76ers. You haven't experienced the Bucks. But on the other hand, Kurt, you haven't experienced the Magic. You haven't experienced the Pistons. You haven't experienced the Rockets, your sort of go-to Ws. So it's hardly a balanced schedule where you can just say around the league, okay, these are all 20 teams in the NBA right now. This is where we stand, and we go forward. And here's the other factor. And I don't know, and I want to, this is actually a subject I want to get to today. By the way, folks, we will get to the chat room in a couple of seconds here. Got a lot going on, so I want to sort of pace this a little. Kurt, are there more injuries than usual this season, or are there more teams being proactive and players being proactive when it comes to injuries? In other words, and this has become an issue down here with Eric Spoelstra talking about needing players to get back to the court, Have we reached a point where teams are protecting their investments a little bit more? Maybe the Lakers with LeBron because they know there's still crunch time coming. Or, and this is my theory, and I wrote about it on my Ask IRS on Sentinel.com today, because so many players have personal trainers, are there more medical opinions? In other words, it used to be you would say, I don't feel so good. You go to the arena. You go to the training room, the team training room. You'd go to the team doctor, the team physician. You get your prognosis. You decide from there. Now, Kurt, it seems to me, players are also going to their personal trainers,
yes,
their personal physicians. And the one thing, you know, we've all been through this, when we've had to go to the real doctors and get a second opinion and all those kind of things. When you're going through that, sometimes you just get too much information and it's information overload. So my question is, with all the injuries, tonight the Heat have 10 of their 16 players somewhere listed on the injury report. Is it a matter of they're hurt more than ever, they're cautious more than ever, or TMI?
I think actually a little of both. I think teams are more cautious, absolutely. I think teams, more than just cautious, teams have come to view recovery and getting through the marathon of the season differently than they did even 10 years ago, right, Ira?
Like, okay, I agree.
Yeah, and so they're thinking more, hey, I mean, the best example I've seen so far is Golden State has played both of their games in New Orleans. Both of them happen to be second night of a back-to-back, last game of a road trip, and they sat everybody, right? They sat everyone you can, worth naming on the Warriors, pretty much in both of those games.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I'm there, but look, I was mentioning this, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's how teams approach it now. And that ties back into, you haven't, like you were saying, having not have a sense of the teams, because the other thing that matters, and it balances out over 82 pretty much, is when you catch teams. Like you said, you've played the Kings twice. I don't know that they can play this well all year long, but right now they're playing good basketball. Like right now, the Kings are everything that they want to be, and they're lighting their beam and they're all excited.
They're great.
Yeah, they're a lot of, and they're a lot of fun, honestly. They're great offense and bad defense, which makes for entertaining basketball for us, even if it's driving Mike Brown a little crazy. That said, they're going to hit, like, somebody's going to catch them in February and they're going to be losing to Orlando, right? Like, you're going to catch them at the right time. And that balances out over time, but right now it hasn't. When you catch a team really.
Yeah, that's a really good point because, again, like, I'll give you the other example. There were teams that were supposed to try to lose and that are accidentally winning.
Yeah.
And so if you're getting Indiana now or Utah now, the Heat already got Indiana once and lost. They're in 2 weeks. They're back playing up in Indiana again. There comes a point where those teams organically will say, yeah, this is good, but not good enough. We could still sell off our Miles Turner, our Lauri Markkanen, our players who were unfortunately helping us win, and we can ease into the lottery and go that direction. So I get that also when you're talking about the schedule there, when you're talking about injuries. Matter of fact, I'm gonna put this out there now because as people have, if you've listened to the RedRecover.com show over the last few months, you know that I try to put Kurt on the spot. Kurt, of course, worked for Pro Basketball Talk. He does some aggregating with his own opinion thrown in there, not just your typical, hey, someone said this. But I want to put a question to Kurt right now so I can get Kurt aggregated elsewhere and put him on the spot. And the question is this. And again, if you're not from Pro Basketball Talk and you're aggregating somewhere else, like all these guys who do it on Twitter in their mom's basement or now on Mastodon, Kurt Heelan, are today's players too soft? Are today's players softer? Now, this is like old man get off my lawn radio, but are players simply not willing to play through what players played through 5, 10, 15 years ago?
I wouldn't call it softer, but no. They are so much more. Look, there's more money involved. There's so much money involved.
Great point.
And that if you're, I mean, what's the, it's $10 million and change this year for the mid-level exception, the median NBA salary.
Right.
If you're making $10 million a year on a four, you know, like that's generation, you know, like it sets you up for life. Yeah, I'm going to be really cautious. I'm going to go get the second opinion. I am not going to rush back from the, I mean, I don't want to say everybody does this because Ja came back really fast last night from his ankle thing. But guys are a little hesitant to come back until they're 100%, until they're not ready. And I think that
Kurt, I want to interrupt you for a second. But here's my question, and I'm getting this from people on the chat board, and also I've gotten this from my Ask Ira at SunSentinel.com. This is not the NFL where the money isn't guaranteed. This is not the NFL where if you get injured in games 1, 2, and 3, you might not get paid for games 12, 13, and 14. The one blessing of the NBA and maybe bane of the NBA is just about everything is guaranteed. So the question I've been getting from people is this, whether it's LeBron or Jimmy Butler or others, they're getting paid between $400,000 and $600,000 a game, whether they play or not. But also, they're getting that money regardless of if they tweak that injury. They're getting that money anyway. So the one point, and I understand what fans are saying about this, is why aren't they pushing through? What are they risking? A lot of these guys have 3, 4, 5 years left on the contract. God bless Jimmy Butler and what he's done for the Heat. But I think, Kurt Heelan, you would agree this is Jimmy Butler's last big contract. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he'll get another one, but not this big. Yeah,
he's not risking the family income. You can make an argument Tyler Hero is out with the ankle. Hey, he's going to get another one. Even though he's getting 4 and 130 starting next year when he's 24, there's still going to be his contract when he's 28. I guess you're saying you're protecting that ankle or Achilles from something more. But that's what I don't get, Kurt. And again, I'm not old man get off my lawn here. I'm just saying is these guys are getting, again, Jimmy Butler is getting $400,000 a game. James Harden is getting more than that per game. Shouldn't there be a degree of push through it versus in the NFL? And you see old stories about needles and things like that. And again, as much as we talk about all the training regimens, there's so much more out there. Hell, they can go for some redrecover.com, you know, red light therapy if they want. There's so many more tools out there. We see the Hayden Hurst commercial when we go on break here about what he does and what they have available. So my question is, Steve Kerr, acting in the best interest of his team, plays no one against the Pelicans. To me, you should get your money refunded. To me, it's like going to a Broadway show and you want to go see the producers. And okay, Matthew Broderick's not going to be there, but at least I'm getting Nathan Lane. Wait a minute. Neither Matthew Broderick or Nathan Lane. Yeah. It's not the same show anymore from two stand-ins. I don't know. It just seems to me, and again, I'm not harping because the Heat have 10 players on the injured list. I'm harping because when we turn on our league pass on almost a nightly basis, we're not sure who's playing. Kurt, I know you're like me, especially at Pro Basketball Talk. You will go to that NBA injury report every hour on the half hour. You will start at the 1:30, the 2:30, the 3:00, just constantly checking who's in, who's out tonight. If it hasn't gotten out of hand, I'll throw it one other direction. Folks, we'll get back more Heat-centric in a second. Kurt, what would you do about this? What would you do when you see these injury reports and as much as half, probably more, are legitimate? There's also guys who are either erring on the side of caution or just know they're getting paid anyway.
Yeah. I definitely think that that's there. And it hurts the product, right? Like, and this is, I mean, I don't think Adam Silver's solution of an in-season tournament solves the problem, but you've got to come up with something because the teams and the players are telling you and I, the fans, these games don't matter. These regular season games aren't that important. And until you either play fewer games so they become important or you do something good, like if there's 82 and I can afford to miss 25 and be fine, then I'm going to, you know, not that everybody's going to go AWOL Kyrie Irving in the middle of the season. Like guys are going to pick their spots and miss time. And I don't want to take away, again, certainly legitimate injuries. Guys are certainly missing time for that. And some guys are pushing back. But there's a lot of, hey, it's just the regular season. It's just the regular season. And it devalues the product, right? It's, as a fan, why am I going to afford? It's not cheap to go see a Heat game.
No.
It is not going to be inexpensive to go see a Heat game. Why am I forking it over to go see them if I don't think I'm going to get a high-level product?
And again, this is the exact point I wanted to get to with Kurt Heelan at Pro Basketball Talk. I'm Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. You're watching RedRecover.com Inside the Paint, our weekly show about the Heat and around the NBA. This is where I wanted to get you to, Kurt, for this reason. So when you are four games under 500, 18 games in, and you, Kurt Heelan, are telling me it's early, and me, Ira Winderman, who just went on a four-game road trip through snow and winter and hell and eight-degree wind chill, putting up for all of that to watch these games, my question is this. Is it still early? The players might say it's still early because there's more than 60 games left. Ira Winderman looks at the standings and says, you know what? The Bucks and the Celtics are starting to distance themselves to a degree and running away. You and I have spoken on our show. The Heat saw dramatically on Sunday. The Cavaliers are good. What we saw last night from Philadelphia is that's a very resilient team, that they can find a way without Embiid, without Maxey, without Harden. They're going to stay level. They're going to get some quality wins. Honestly, what we saw from the Nets before Kyrie came back is a team that said, screw this. We can't keep falling behind. Then we saw Kyrie come back, and I know what happened last night, but he's a good player, and he'll make that team better. So, Kurt Heelan, everyone out there in the chat board, appreciate people who are chiming in already. When is it not too early?
It's
when you and I come on one of our Wednesday 9 a.m. shows and not do the old la-di-da-di-da, it's only 15 games, it's only 18, it's only 20, only 25, it's only 30, it's only midseason, there's still the trade deadline. When do you reach critical mass and you say to me, Ira, it's not early anymore?
I don't think it's early anymore in the East for the reasons you mentioned. The Heat and Bucks are starting to pull away.
You mean the Bucks and Celtics, right?
I wish it was the Heat and Bucks. But you're starting to – I'm not looking at the standings suddenly right now, so I'm not sure what the gap in number of games behind is. In the West, it was really different. I'm not sure what it is today, but like 2 days ago, the 10-seed Warriors who were below 500 were still like 3.5 games out of first.
Sure.
If you don't sense that gap is huge, then you're not as – then, hey, I'm going to rest everybody in New Orleans because I'm not panicked about the gap. The Heat need to start being – they need urgency. They need some real urgency because that gap is growing. And the teams that you, like you mentioned, the teams you've got to climb over are good. We talked about it going into the season. This is a deep conference. There's a lot of good teams. The Cavaliers are better than we expected, but you've still got it. Toronto's solid. They're not going anywhere. Philadelphia is good. They're not going anywhere. They're not getting worse. You're going to have to climb over these teams, and you can't. What's the first rule of climbing out of a hole, Ira?
Right.
Yeah. You got to stop digging. They've got to get some wins. Yeah. They've got to start to turn this around sooner rather than later, because otherwise the hole gets too deep and you can't get out. And suddenly you're, like we've talked about, you get that 5, 6, 7 seed and you're in a brutal first round matchup.
You're not only brutal first round matchup, and again, we'll get to this more on the other side of the break, but you have to play the survival series just to get to that first round matchup. So you might wind up being in a play-in where you're going to have, say, the Bulls as your first game and then the Raptors as your second game. And, 2 days later, welcome to Milwaukee or welcome to Boston, where it's not like it's going to be last season. Also, it's 6.5 games. The Heat are behind first. Right now, I think the Heat are really looking more, how many games are we behind fourth place and maybe that escape hatch to get somewhere close enough so there are about 4-plus games out of that. Again, I know it's early. I know there are injuries, and I want to get more to the Heat injuries. We will update everyone on where the Heat stand injury-wise tonight against the Wizards at home, whatever they're calling the arena, Friday against the Wizards at home, whatever they're calling the arena. And I want to go through with Kurt and talk about each player being out, how much it means to the Heat, and whether there's a compensatory element for those players or whether the Heat are screwed. I kind of got a feeling what Kurt might say. That's after this break on RedRecover.com, Inside the Paint. And welcome back to our Turkey Thanksgiving edition of RedRecover.com, Inside the Paint. I'm Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. 9 a.m. plus here in the East. I'm good. He's Kurt Heelan from ProBasketballTalk.com and NBCSports.com, or whatever the hell they call it out there. And it's a crack of dawn out there in L.A., so he's still caffeining up a little bit. Kurt, the story, we spoke about it in our first segment, about the Heat falling into the hole they're now, right, 7-11. All the injuries they have coming in. Tyler Hero has missed more than 2 weeks with an ankle sprain. We were not told it's a high ankle sprain. I think that's why there's a degree of consternation. Jimmy Butler came back from the Heat's trip after 2 games, played in only 1 because of knee pain. And a matter of fact, I want to get to this. Kurt does a lot of interaction also with people. He's on Twitter. You can find him in other places. Kurt, when fans complain, because this is what I've been dealing with the last week about injuries and players are too soft, and they'll talk about football guy and other guys. And I'll get to this. I'll give you my thoughts after. How do you handle fans complaining about players sitting out with injuries when fans decide through their own online diagnosis at WebMD they should be on the court? Do you sort of just defer? Do you look at the injury and say, well, with the knee, with an ankle, with this, it seems too long? Sort of what's your approach when you come with dealing with people who ask questions like I'll get to in a second in our chat board with issues like this?
Yeah, I think people underestimate the grind of the NBA on a player's season. So I tend to default to that. Look, the human body wasn't meant to run multiple marathons on hardwood every year. Like it is hard on the knees. It is hard on the ankles. It is hard on the body. That, yes, though, they've got state-of-the-art recovery, not just redrecover.com infrared light. I mean, they've got all this equipment, all this stuff.
Right.
But there comes I don't think that they're mentally soft. I genuinely believe they're looking out for number one. They're looking out for themselves more than the team most of the time. And getting, like, I think your point about getting second and third opinions earlier was spot on. Every agent now goes to their own doctor, right? It's not even the player. I mean, Kawhi's got his own guys and certain players have their own guys, but their agents all have, hey, this is my guy. Go talk to my guy. Hey, we've got to rest him another week. Like, the agents are looking out for them and telling them it's in their best interest. And you've got a lot of layers and a lot of people around them telling them this. And it takes a special player to kind of like push that aside and like, man, I am playing. I am playing no matter how much pain.
But again, you're getting those opinions. And for example, you're out in LA with LeBron now. I'm sure you've run into Mike Mancy as his personal physical therapist. Mike was with the Cavaliers. LeBron comes here. Mike comes down to the Heat. He's great at what he does. Yes. He welcome into the training room. He knows LeBron's body. I mean, that's his temple. That's where he worships. So he knows that, goes back to Cleveland with him, goes to LA. Jimmy Butler has a personal trainer, Armando Rivas. Again, very good at what he does. He was with Jimmy from the start in Chicago, went to Minnesota, went to Philadelphia. He's on the Heat staff now. He's sort of Jimmy's guy. This is not that unusual. This is not someone being megalomaniacal. This is just how it is in the NBA. But you have to work through that extra level that you previously didn't have. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, if you go back over the years, Michael Jordan always had Tim Grover. But Tim Grover wasn't necessarily in the locker room, whether it was Chicago Stadium, whether it was the United Center. He was a consultant. You would go to your doctors. You would get their opinions. Then you'd go see your guy. You'd go work with your therapist, often at their own house, at their own gym, so to speak. And that's how it worked. And this has changed now, and we see guys there in the first place. So we're dealing with all these Heat absences or not. And at one point, I want to stress to Heat Nation now, because I know Kurt Heelan and I made shows out of this. Here's what's ironic. If Max Strus misses tonight's game, he originally was listed as out. Now he's listed as questionable with a shoulder injury. I'm going to put this to Kurt. I'm going to see if he's paying attention. Heat Nation, we're putting Kurt on the spot now. Kurt, if Max Strus can't play tonight, who will be the only player to appear in every single Heat game this season?
Kyle Lowry, right?
How about that? You and I have spent the entire offseason talking about Kyle's conditioning, Pat Riley's mandate to him, Eric Spoelstra's suggestion, the workout videos he did. We had Sean put some of them up here to show Kyle working out, and we were all a little skeptical. And here we are, 19 games into the season, and the last man who's standing is going to be the guy who's 36 years old, who we had all the questions about in the first place. So my question to you becomes this. Can we, at a certain point in a player's career, call him injury prone?
Yeah.
Or this is the pushback we always get, Kurt Heelan, and from the player is, there were a series of freak injuries. If I didn't step on that ankle, if this guy didn't run to me and hit me in knee-to-knee contact. In other words, Anthony Davis might be the litmus test or the example out there with you on the West Coast and the Lakers. He's hurt a lot. But almost all of them are incidents that can be traced back to the game. Not sort of swelling and pain, but just this happened in this game, that happened in that game. Tyler Hero, last season's playoffs, he did valiantly try to come back for that final game against the Celtics and was not himself. Now he's missed over 2 weeks with an ankle injury. Kurt, when do you look at a player, number one, when do you look at a player and say he's injury prone, or do you not use that tag?
I do. I think it applies. By the way, the other thing with the Tyler Hero situation, how many guys do you hear talk about, I got to take a couple days off. If this were the playoffs, I would go. But it's not the playoffs, so I'm not, like, you get that reasonably often. I don't know if it's the case in Tyler's case. But, like, you get that from guys who are kind of, they think they could go. No, I think you can get to a point where if, and you're right, Anthony Davis is the poster child for this. If you have enough fluke injuries, it's just not a fluke. And did you, there's real questions about how hard Anthony Davis pushes through some of the injuries he's got. But he's, if it happens enough, and I think it's somewhat style of play, Dwayne Wade would miss some time here. Dwayne Wade had injuries because of his style of play. I worry for Ja. Like, there's certain players where
I remember the Dwayne Wade commercials. What was it, like, fall seven times, get up eight? And they had that whole marketing campaign about him that he was proud of at the start. And then there was a point where Dwayne said, this hurts and this isn't as good. I love Ja. But when the big guys, when the little guys get up that high, they're that much off the ground. It's one thing for a 7-footer to dunk like that. It's another thing for the little guys. There's a lot of airspace to fall. Big guy jump, not a lot of airspace. Dwayne Dedman jump, no airspace. John Moran jump, a lot of airspace. And I agree with that. And yet that's what we want to see. And that's what the NBA promotes. Just like in football, the big hits. Except the big hit ease don't feel so good about it when they get up from that injury and go from there. So let's go through the heat injuries right now. Tyler Herro's, we're talking about 8 games missed with an ankle sprain. Kurt, if they would have told me at the start this was a high ankle sprain, different injury, I'd say we're talking weeks. Okay, we'll move on. We'll be able to play without him. We can get on. Instead, there was thought that 2 weeks ago, or I guess actually just a week ago, it seems like a long time, that Tyler was going to meet the Heat plane and take off for the game last Wednesday in Toronto. That didn't happen. There was a bit of a surprise, I believe, from what I'm told, even from the staff, that Tyler wasn't there. So now let's flash forward to what we learned or didn't learn. And again, I know I'm putting you on the spot. You don't get to see as much. I'll give you my full thoughts after. How invaluable would you rate the Heat's chances of succeeding without Tyler Hero?
I don't know that he's invaluable, but they're not the same. They just need his shooting and they need his secondary shot creation.
Right.
A lot. That said, and we talked about this earlier, I think what's different this year, maybe it's just because Tyler's starting and not on the bench. Last year, you're like, wow, they're missing this. Oh, hey, they're getting it from, here comes the Gabe Vincents of the world stepping up. Except now Gabe's got to start and play a bunch of minutes because of the injuries. They're just not getting that depth that's there. They're not having anything behind them. And without that, they really need Tyler. They really need his, what he, especially if you're not getting it from Kyle every night.
No. And matter of fact, I mentioned this. And what I mentioned is Eric Spoelstra will always preach defense as the most important part of their game, that we're going to win with defense.
Right.
Because he's old school and that's what he says. But this is an offensive league. And when the Heat were blowing their 11-point lead in Toronto, their 15-point lead in Washington, their, I think it was 17-point lead against Minnesota, sometimes, Kurt, what you need are relief baskets.
Yeah.
And that's what Tyler Hero provides. Look, I'm not going to send out Tyler Hero and saying, Tyler, we've got to get stops and you've got to do it. You've got to be the guy to stop Ant Edwards. I get that he's not. But you know what, Kurt? You don't stop a run with a defensive stand. Okay, maybe instead of it not being 17-0, it's 15-0 or 13-0, but they're still on a run. You stop a run with what Eric Spoelstra calls a relief basket. I think Tyler Hero would have been critical in those situations against those rallying teams, that he would have created something on his own. He is the Heat's not only best creative scorer, but again, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Kurt. Who the hell else on the Miami Heat roster is a creative scorer?
I mean, outside of Jimmy, who can obviously create his own shot, I don't know who else really does that for them well. Because Kyle,
I think Jimmy has to labor. It's hard to create those free throws and to get space. He's not explosive. He never was explosive.
No,
to me, is Tyler and what the Heat have been missing without him and why he's so important. other player now who's wound up, who's missed the last three games and is listed as out already for tonight against the Wizards. How invaluable is Jimmy Butler?
Well, to me, he just, when he's focused and brings it in the regular season, we've seen it in their big wins, in the quality wins they've had. He's the guy who can, yeah, he's not explosive, but he just can get to his spots and get his shot. And if he gets to his spot, you're not stopping him. He's so physical. Plus, the block on Devin Booker, like the intensity that he brings on both ends when he's fully engaged is something that few players in the league can match.
Yes. And he's their best two-way player. And I think if you take away
the team.
You take away the best two-way player from any team,
yeah,
for the most part. Now, the Lakers are surprising me a little bit because I think we both agree LeBron is their best two-way player.
Yeah, hey.
And they found a way without him. So God
bless
them.
Anthony Davis has been what they'd – three straight 30 and 15 plus games. Like, he has these stretches where you're like, oh yeah, remember when we used to think he could be as good as Giannis? And then Giannis like went to another stratosphere, but like he can be that guy.
But, and actually, and if LeBron is their best two-way player, when Anthony Davis asserts himself, he can be a great two-way player also when he's digging in on the defensive end. So we have Tyler's been out. We have Jimmy's been out, and then the first two games of this trip, Bam Adebayo was out. How invaluable is Bam Adebayo?
A defensive anchor. They're just not the same team. I mean, even with his offensive struggles at moments this year, they're just not the same defense. They can't switch. They can't do everything. They don't have – I was going to say they don't have another Bam Adebayo, but there are not really other Bam Adebayos around the league.
I agree with that. His anchor and what he gives them, he sort of holds it together on the defensive end. There is no plan B there. They saw what they had in Nikola Jokic at Jovic. I wish they had Jokic. Jovic.
No, I thought he played okay.
Yeah, maybe one day they could just switch him out and do it that way. and so you could see with Bam. And the reason I'm bringing this all together now is this reason. I'm not going to put you too much on the spot here because it's something I looked up. We are November 22nd now. I want to ask you to give me the game. When is the last time the Heat fielded Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, and Bam Adebayo together in the same game? Just give me a date.
Well, it wasn't the Suns game, was it, that they won? No, because Tyler didn't play that one.
We're November 22nd. Can you throw me a date?
October 31st.
You're right there. November 1st. The victory over the Golden State Warriors was the last time. So, for all of these, we're trying to assess who the Heat are and what the Heat are. It's been 23 weeks, 21 days, since the Heat have had a lineup where, hey, there's Bam Adebayo at center. There's Jimmy Butler at small forward. There's Tyler Hero at shooting guard, which basically is this team. And so I think the thought of you can't get a read, and again, this is where I wanted to get to the chat real quick. I hope I haven't lost this right now because I thought it was a really good point. But there was a point earlier on our chat board where it was mentioned by Two Extreme that even when the Heat had those three together, they still weren't very good. They were still losing games those first 2 weeks of the season. But my thought, Kurt, is from what we're seeing from the Sacramento Kings and other teams, you find yourself at a certain point. Look at the Celtics. The Celtics were very uneven at the start of the season. And then Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum got together and said, Robert Williams is not coming through that door. And we have to learn how to make it work with Malcolm Brogdon. And we have to bring it together. And they have. And I don't think the Heat, Jimmy Butler's favorite word when he taunted me last year, have coalesced at this point. And here's the point. The coalescing, whatever the word is there, is not going to happen until all three are together. And what I would say to this, and I mentioned this in my Ask Ira at SunSentinel.com today, and I'm going to throw this to Kurt in a second because he covers more of a national perspective. I think you can take some solace from this. The Boston Celtics were about 16-19 last year at New Year's and 10th place in the Eastern Conference. Then they were in the NBA Finals. They found a way to bring it together. Kurt, can the Heat use that as an example of, hey, look where the Celtics were last December. It can happen. Or can the Heat not use that because they don't have Jason Tatum and they don't have Jaylen Brown?
Well, I think they're closer to that, right? Like, 18 and 21 was the number I always used with the Heat. With the Celtics last year. They were, like, you're almost halfway through the season and you're like, eh, they're okay. And they figured out, A, they got everybody healthy. They made some two big switches. One was putting Robert Williams in the starting lineup. The other was, oh, Dennis Schroeder, you can go.
Right. this isn't working. Right.
I don't think you can underestimate how much that sometimes helps a locker room. Sometimes there is addition by subtraction. I think the Heat, you nailed it. Over the course of a long season, if you listen to Spoelstra and every other coach, frankly, out there, build habits, build chemistry. We are building something. They love this. This marathon becomes about building the thing that they're going to take into the playoffs. The Heat haven't had a chance to do that. Right. They have not built any good habits because, I mean, they just haven't had the right guys out there enough to coalesce. I just don't know what I said at the top. I just don't know what this team really looks like. But I think you can. But I think you can take that away in that, hey, this is a team that's done because they've been there before. This is I don't want to say flip the switch, but this is a team that can get back to that level if things break their way.
And after our break on RedRecover.com, I want to talk about RedRecover.com Inside the Paint Show. I want to talk about some of the young players and others who've stepped in and Bam Adebayo's theory of, hey, they've learned in between a rock and a hard place, they'll be better for it later during the season. And then Kurt and I, as we do every week at the end of our show, we'll run down the Heat's upcoming schedule. And Kurt will either give us reason for hope or why you should load up on the tryptophan and just sleep over the next week with your turkey because the schedule could leave them with a bunch of turkeys. Anyway, all that and more after this break on RedRecover.com Inside the Paint. And we're back for our third segment on this week's RedRecover.com Inside the Paint Show. I'm Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He's Kurt Heelan from Pro Basketball Talk and NBCSports.com. If you missed either of our first two segments, you can go to any of Big O Show's podcast outlets and you can download those. And while you're doing that, just smash like buttons when you come across the show anywhere and everywhere. Big O will join us at the top of the hour. We had a little bit of a cold open again today. Kurt, we've spoken in our first segment about the Heat's injury status and where they stand overall in the big picture, whether there should be concern. In our second segment, we spoke about how the Heat stand in the East and whether moves can be made. And I talked about opening this segment with this. Do you believe that playing players bigger minutes than maybe they otherwise would have received, seeing guys like Nikola Jovic, maybe Jamal Kane, Orlando Robinson had a huge game in Washington the other day, played all 5 minutes of overtime. Does that provide a value down the road? Or is it just a matter of, hey, Ira, this is an old team. And when everyone comes back, you're going to play Kyle Lowry, you're going to play Jimmy Butler, you're going to play Dwayne Dedman, you're going to play Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. Was there any value in seeing the kids stuff over the last week?
I think there's value. First off, you're not going to get better at playing NBA basketball without playing some NBA basketball. Right? Like Jovic has got to be out there some and get some experience. And I think that pays off. It's also, if you're really pushing it, you're going to need them during the regular season because this is an older core. And you get into the playoffs, Ira, and fans have seen this with the Heat forever, weird matchups come up. Like you end up in weird, strange matchups and suddenly maybe it's not Jovic, maybe it's somebody else. Orlando Robinson has to be out there because he's the guy who can match up with player X and cause problems. And suddenly, guys you didn't think were going to be critical become critical for that series. So getting them experience matters. I think you've got to give them some over the course of the season. It's just easier to do it when your team's healthy and you can pick your spots.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not going to overstate an Orlando Robinson, Jamal Kane. One, they're in two ways. They're not playoff eligible, although the Heat will have enough cap room to transfer them to standard contracts, or at least one of them, by the end of the year. The Jovic thing to me is the typical NBA version of the backup quarterback. You want to see what you haven't seen. You think someone has amazing talent. You need to get him out there. He reminds me, he's just a long lineage of guys who have come over from Europe as great offensively skilled players. And you can see the takeoff path for him. You can see he's going to have that game, the three-point shot, the passing, knowing how to move without the ball, the screen setting and the screen slipping. He has all that. I'm not sure. Well, at 205 pounds and 6'10 right now, he can't have the defense because he simply can't muscle up, and that'll change. The one thing the Heat have been a little bit resistant of is this, developing the pure offensive player and dealing with the results. And, Kurt, I wanted to posit to you this way. Was Dirk Nowitzki ever a good defender?
I would say at the end, he was passable because he figured out how
that's
to
exactly
use
exactly the word. It's funny. When you were forming the P with your mouth, I thought that's the word I was thinking in my head was passable.
Yeah.
He reached that level of probably substandard still, but you can get away with it.
Curry's that way.
Nikola Jokic, for all he does with his bulk, is he a great defensive player?
No, but he's become better, and you can't attack him quite the same way because he's a high IQ player. He's sort of like Marcus, not as good as Marcus Gasol at his peak, but
right.
Big guys who are smart figure out how to get in the way.
Okay, and I can buy that also. My question with Nikola Jokic is, if the Heat are expecting him to emerge as a two-way Heat system dog defender, then their priorities are misplaced. That I think he can be a nice scorer, whether it's a starter, whether it's off the bench, whether it's a change of pace. I think he can give that to your team. I don't think he could ever become this Bam Adebayo, this dogged defender presence. So my concern there is, can the Heat accept him for what he is? Or will that not be good enough? And I think that's the issue with these minutes with Nikola Jokic right now. I'm enjoying them, but I do wonder about the Miami Heat endgame, because I don't know if they can. And so, Kurt, I'll go back to you now, like we often do, for the national perspective. Do you have to be more accepting of those kind of players? That when you get these European players in, or it doesn't, I don't want to make this ethnic or anything like that, but when you get in that type of player, the big guy who likes to handle, doesn't really love contact, can create unique shots for you, and will be a negative defender. Should you learn to accept that in an NBA where probably the top offensive teams now trump the top defensive teams?
I think there's a certain level of adjusting to those guys. And it doesn't mean you don't work on them to become these passable defenders. But at some level, you've got to just deal with it. Because if he is bringing enough offense, and Jokic isn't necessarily there yet, but if he can bring enough offense, then you figure out how to work the defense around him. Because you need... You're right. At the end of the day, when we were talking about the relief buckets earlier and the runs, you need, even if it's Jamal Crawford or Jordan Clarkson's of the world,
right?
But just go get a bucket, because right now we've got to stop their run and go get a bucket. Those guys are invaluable. Tyler Hero can be that guy. Maybe Jokic can be that guy.
No, and I agree with it, and I think you make a really interesting point there. So my concern is, okay, Nikola Jokic will never be a great defender, we think. And I don't want to sell him short. The guy's 19 years old, hasn't graduated high school yet. And I do ask him every time I see him, did you take your final yet? He said, no time. I'm going to get around to that online. So we're talking about a high school kid right here. Kurt, you say you can find a way to work around Nikola Jokic. But can you find a way to work around Nikola Jokic's defense when Tyler Hero also is in that starting lineup?
Once you put two minus defenders on the floor at a time, the best teams, the Bucks, the Celtics, I guess we're going to throw the Cavaliers in that group this week. Too many places to attack, too many places to go at. The best teams will pull those teams apart, pull that apart. Like you can hide one guy, but it's really hard to hide two against good teams.
Okay, you can't hide two starters. Can you hide three rotation players? Because Duncan Robinson still has a massive contract and has at least 3 years left on that contract, depending on the guarantee in the fourth year. Can you be a defensive team when your top eight includes Nikola Jokic, Tyler Hero, and Duncan Robinson?
You can. It's harder. It's just way harder.
Right.
It depends on how many minutes guys are getting and who they're playing with and all that. Especially the second units generally are not filled with good defenders. So you can kind of get away with it a little bit. But
and that's why Tyler worked as a sixth man last year also, because he was with the second unit.
Yeah. So, he's not getting exposed the same way. Yeah.
So you have those. So again, to go over the injury report tonight for the Miami Heat, we know that Jimmy Butler is out. We know that, we thought Max Strus was listed as out, he was upgraded to questionable. You have Duncan Robinson still on the injury report. He's questionable now because of that ankle he rolled against Cleveland. But I want to get to two names that have been steadfast on the injury report and go back. Well, actually, two names that one has been in, one has been out, and look back at those contracts. Number one, Dwayne Dedmon, they brought him back for $6.1 million, which seemed excessive at the time. People are going, oh, no, that's creating a trade chip, forgetting that when you sign a one-year deal and you have bird rights, you have right of first refusal on a trade, forgetting that because he took a major increase from last season's minimum, instead of becoming trade eligible on December 15th, you have to wait till January 15th. Yes, I know hindsight is so much easier, but Kurt Heelan, $6.1 million, Dwayne Dedman dealing with plantar fasciitis, which we know can linger forever, yes, but certainly for a season. How do you look at that deal right now?
It does seem a little high now, doesn't it? And it just, it becomes, the idea that he's a trade chip is great if somebody's willing to take him on. But right, yes, now, he's not the center of any, like, I'm not taking, he's salary filler in a deal, but he is not, he is not the deal I am making. He's, and that's an issue because there are guys making, if he were giving you more and you might be able to switch him for somebody making the taxpayer mid-level type of money.
Sure.
That does bring value to you.
Right. So you have that contract. Here's the other one. And I'm going to give people a little bit of the genesis on this contract, and then we'll discuss the current implications. The Heat have so tried to make this work with Victor Oladipo. So we got to July 1st. I was talking to Kurt. I was out in Las Vegas. And the original report was Victor Oladipo coming back on a one-year, $11 million deal. And he's saying, okay, they're going to take a shot. They're going to give him a year. It's their money, whatever. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. If it works, Vic can go get a big deal otherwise. Then the Heat go through their machinations of some of the other moves they want to make and realize, well, if we give him 11, we're going to be a tax team. But if we restructure the contract and we do it basically 8 and 9, 8.5 and 9.5, we can give him a two-year $18 million deal, player option on the second year in case he breaks out, and we're now below the luxury tax threshold. We get $17 million, up to $17 million back. I think other teams will come back under the tax, but we'll probably wind up getting an eight-figure tax rebate by not being in the tax, so we'll go in that direction. So instead of one-year $11 million deal, we wind up with two-year $18 million deal. Victor Oladipo, and I think we're all surprised because he did play in the preseason, has yet to play this season. You can say he's a trade chip, but the only way to trade him is either to have him pick up his player option ahead of time, or have him approve of a trade, again, massive raise, bird rights, basically a one-year deal because the second year is an option. He has to approve the trade on January 15th or later. I have thought, and we've spoken about this on the show for a while, that Vic was the perfect pull-it-together guy, that you could try Tyler Hero in the starting lineup because you had Vic's shot creation with the second team, that you didn't have to force-feed Gabe Vincent minutes that now have left him injured, questionable for tonight also, because you had a guy like Vic that could play off the ball or could play on the ball. You had that option also. I think we here, or me here, put a little too much faith in Victor Oladipo, but I think the Heat did also. So my question is, Kurt, when you look at the Heat and where they stand, and again, it's hindsight, and we can do that because here we are a day before Thanksgiving, was the two-year deal a mistake for the Miami Heat? What did you think Victor Oladipo could be, and what do you think now going forward about Victor Oladipo?
I think the hope was he could be the guy we saw flashes of in the playoffs last year, right? Like if he could, and I didn't know that if he was going to be healthy and be able to play, you know, 70 games at that level or anything, but if he could be solid and then come in the playoffs and play somewhere near that level, and again, very useful in certain matchups, need that shot creation off the bench. It still seemed like a, I don't know, bidding against yourself contract in some ways. Like it just, it did feel like, didn't it? Like, wow, well, we're doing, for all, you can rationalize all the reasons they did it to stay under the tax and give yourself all these reasons. Now you're locked in. He's going to pick that player option up. Like as of right
unless,
now.
Unless he has a great second half of the season, unless he has a moment like he did in the playoffs last year when he was a really good defender and helped them on that end of the court, then because there is a degree of delusion from players that they might be, they view themselves as better than the statistics do or the metrics do. So I've seen players give up money. And I'm like, what the hell were they thinking? Because in there, and then they fire their agent after they don't get the money when they thought, well, I'm worth more. What do you mean I'm only getting the minimum? Like Vic a year ago moves on, fires his agent, moves in another direction. You see that all the time. But you can just see how that really sort of stuck with the Heat. Here's the deal. The Heat did not have the cap space. They didn't have any cap space to sign a replacement for Victor Oladipo. The only option they had, because they weren't going to spend the full mid-level, because that makes you hard-capped, and in their case, would have put him pretty close also to the luxury tax, was to spend the mini mid-level, the taxpayer mid-level. The reason the Heat had to fight to bring back or paid to bring back Victor Oladipo was they targeted the mini mid-level, the taxpayer mid-level for Caleb Martin. Yeah. So the question becomes, would they have been better off punting on both Caleb Martin, who's been the starting power forward every game except the one he was suspended, and punting on Vic and saying instead we're going to offer someone $5 million and try to upgrade that backup backcourt position? So I think that's where they were. They were stuck a little rock and hard place. That sums up the Heat injury position. Now I want to look at the upcoming schedule before you and I again talk again on next Wednesday. So let's look at the schedule. We got a baseball series. We got the Wizards here on Wednesday, Wizards here on Friday. I'll start this one. These are must-win games for the Miami Heat because of what follows. And what follows is Atlanta, Boston, Boston, Memphis. Maybe a road to ruin. Maybe by the time we talk in 2 weeks, you're going, Ira, you can't climb out of this. It's too deep. I don't care if everyone was hurt. To me, Kurt, especially with Bradley Beal ailing, especially with the Heat's, I don't want to say B team, D team almost beating the Wizards in overtime last Friday in Washington at Capital One Arena. Am I overstating, knowing that what follows is Atlanta, Boston, Boston, Memphis, that these are must-win games, Jimmy Butler or no Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero or no Tyler Hero for the Miami Heat?
No, I'm with you because Boston's playing at a high level, and even in a baseball series, it's going to be really hard to take one of them from them. Those are the Hawks. I'm not as sold on the Hawks as everyone else, and they're really good. Their offense is really clicking, and it's working. And I don't believe the Wizards are as good statistically. They're just not as good as their record. They're just kind of playing over their head. That said, you can't afford the baseball split here, can you?
I don't think you can afford it. My question is, without Tyler, I'm thinking, and for sure without Jimmy, you're still a relatively shorthanded team. Yeah. And Kristaps Porzingis has really come on. That would have been a perfect trade acquisition for the Heat. Instead, the Wizards with Spencer Dinwiddie are able to pull that off and change their team. You have that. Real quick, we're on the way out here. Atlanta Sunday, early Sunday, late afternoon start. The Hawks, where do you see them right now? Where do you see that matchup against the Heat?
Their backcourt is great, but they still struggle defensively. They have great moments, but if you can get some good backcourt defense, I think that team's beatable. I'm just not as high on them as everyone else.
Yeah, I think that might be another must-win game also for the Heat. But again, I think that game, unlike Washington, you need Tyler, you need Jimmy, you need to be a little bit closer to home because of DeJounte Murray, Trey Young, John Collins not doing as much. And also the Clint Capella effect. He always gets a double-double against the Heat. So I think that's going to make that interesting also. Next week when we're back, we'll be talking about another baseball-type series, except over at Fenway, when the Heat have games against the Celtics on Wednesday and Friday night, but we'll get to that then. But for now, this has been your RedRecover.com Inside the Paint, basically injury show. Next week, hopefully something more healthy. Until then, Kurt, to you and yours and everyone out there, a happy Thanksgiving. I'll be back with Big O on Friday with their Acura Pembroke Pines report. But right now, the Big O show rolls on.